You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Wednesday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, a bunch of breaking news. Let's start locally. Yesterday, I shared the news that had just been broken by the Journal Sentinel here in Milwaukee that the president of the Milwaukee Police Association was considering writing a letter to the Trump administration to invite the National Guard here to Milwaukee. I gave some comments on that. What I hadn't yet seen, which is quite important, was that Republican Congressional Representative Scott Fitzgerald yesterday actually poo-pooed that idea, specifically and directly. So yesterday you had a Republican explicitly saying that is not a good idea and Milwaukee police can handle that issue here. Specifically, here's what Representative Fitzgerald said. Right now, Milwaukee's a different situation as compared to other cities where Trump has either done this or proposed to do this. He continued, we've got actually some good numbers out of Milwaukee over the last couple of years about crime that's leveled off or been reduced. I'm not sure it's something that the White House would really consider when you look at the long list of other communities that have issues as a result of crime and homelessness, etc. Well, today, Republican gubernatorial candidates here in the state of Wisconsin, Bill Berrien and Josh Shulman, signal support for troops in Milwaukee. Is anybody really surprised about that? Yes. Well, so there's that news. Other local news, Wisconsin grassroots advocates are calling on state lawmakers today to adopt an actual minimum wage? Who knew? And to tie it to inflation. I would like to call this the dignity wage, a sustainable wage, you know, an actual minimum wage. It has been at $7.25 an hour here in the state of Wisconsin, which is unconscionable. It has been so since 2009. And let's just put this in context. If you earn $7.25 an hour and say even work 60 hours a week, which I thought our social contract indicated that if you were willing to work hard and pull yourself up by the bootstraps, that you would actually be able to live in dignity. Well, 7 1/4, 60 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, even 52 weeks a year, you're not living in anywhere close to dignity. Watch this space. I'd like to hear how Republicans oppose that. Because when you talk to small business owners, here's what they say. If you raise the minimum wage for every business, then the businesses are actually competing on a level playing field, which kind of sounds like capitalism to me. I'm not sure Republicans are going to go for it. Finally, in other local breaking news this afternoon, Judge Hannah Dugan facing criminal charges under the Trump administration for controlling her courtroom, as any judge is entitled to do earlier this year, is not seeking appeal of the district court decision that denied her motion to dismiss. They have scheduled trial for December. Boy, that one's going to be a doozy. Also on the national level this morning, absolutely devastating testimony, I'll call it, from some of Jeffrey Epstein's victims, reminding us what that scandal that continues to plague the Trump administration is truly all about. The Donald Trump administration also announcing that JAG lawyers, those are military lawyers, may begin to serve potentially as immigration judges. I'll spend more time on this next week with Jim Santel, but let me just leave it here for all of you before I bring on my first guest this afternoon. A lawyer ain't a judge, and a military lawyer ain't an immigration lawyer, which ain't an immigration judge. You see where I'm going here? This is not a good solution for the backlog of immigration court cases. In fact, I think it will make an already strained situation worse, but more on that next week. With that, I'll bring on my first guest, Dan Schaefer, the political editor here at Civic Media and creator of the Recombobulation Area, to talk a bit about Rebecca Bradley's big, long goodbye. Welcome back, Dan. No goodbye for you, just a welcome. This was some pretty big news. It had been signaled for a while, but what was your reaction to the announcement last week that she won't be seeking yet another term on the court?
Yeah, it was an interesting announcement from Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley. You know, anytime there's something coming up before a holiday weekend, those of us who are in the media, particularly political media, have to have our ears perked up a little bit for any kind of announcement that people might not want to be talking about for a few days. And so we're going to circle back today to that announcement from last Friday from Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley, that she will not be seeking another 10-year term on the court and will be essentially leaving the Wisconsin Supreme Court next year when her term is done. So, you know, as we kicked off last year, a run of, I believe, 7 years in a row or something like that, that we will have a 5 years in a row, I think, of a Wisconsin Supreme Court race on the spring election cycle. You know, Chris Taylor, former Democratic state lawmaker and current Dane County judge, has been running in this race for quite some time. And we're yet to, I guess, see now who's going to be the conservative justice. But we know that it will not be Rebecca Bradley, who snuck that news in right before Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, that's the news equivalent of nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see. Please move on. Please move on. Rebecca Bradley, I'm going to give everybody my take on Rebecca Bradley. Since Trump won, and it only accelerated after Janet Protasiewicz's election, Rebecca Bradley has lost her ever-loving mind on the court. I have never read decisions like those penned under Justice Bradley's authorship in the last few years. I think she took Donald Trump's first administration, followed thereby the election of Janet Protasiewicz, which in Wisconsin was in part a reaction to not just Donald Trump's first administration, but of course the reversing of Roe v. Wade. She used that as effectively a, oh, well, now I get to be as explicitly partisan as I wish. It is her decisions, or opinions, I should say, are debased. And they show a real lack of self-awareness, a lack of judicial temperament. They are overtly political documents. She engages in pages of ad hominem or personal attacks directed towards her fellow judges, and I'll contrast, and every single one of her decisions has come down on purely ideological lines. I think all of this has been a lot of performative judging for an audience of one, potentially angling for a federal Article III judicial appointment from Donald Trump. I have bemoaned the more partisan bend of the Wisconsin Supreme Court over the last 10 to 12 years. I think Rebecca Bradley is the worst of it. I won't let the liberal-leaning judges off the hook either, Dan, because I think there's been some of that from the left side of the bench. I urge all of the jurists currently sitting on the court, including Justice Bradley and the time that remains in her tenure, to try to follow the law, leave the politics to the politicians, which should not include our judges. It does no one a service, least of which the people of the state of Wisconsin. I have really been appalled by her work over the last few years. It is not the work of a reasoned and temperamentally fit justice of our state Supreme Court. Now, if you can bear with me, Dan, I got a kind of funny story about Rebecca Bradley. You want to hear it?
Of course I do.
So one of my last departing acts as Milwaukee County's former corp counsel was I gave an address about allyship and advocacy in these very trying times. Rebecca Bradley was also at that county board meeting sitting in ostensibly the front row, and I took the opportunity to address at the top of my remarks the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Needless to say, the justice was looking a wee bit uncomfortable in her seat because I pulled no punches and spared no vitriol for my thoughts on that Supreme Court decision. Dan, what do you make of the Republican judge who seems to have put her nose out front as potentially the GOP nominee? And granted, these are nonpartisan elections, but I'm dispensing with that entire artifice here. Maria Lazar. She has been incredibly hyperpartisan, but nobody knows who she is. What do you make of Judge Lazar?
Well, first, I really wish I could have been a fly on the wall when you were delivering that speech with Rebecca Bradley in the audience. That would have been quite the reaction to be able to witness there. But yeah, Maria Lazar issued a statement on her social media the afternoon after Rebecca Bradley's statement. She is currently a judge on the Wisconsin Court of Appeals for the 2nd District, based out of Waukesha. She was a judge on the Waukesha County Circuit Court. Her career extends, as so many Republican-leaning politicians across the state do, to the Walker administration, where she was defended aspects of the redistricting that they did, some parts of Act 10, a whole host of different things. And I'm sure you have some insight on her time on the bench, Maggie.
Yeah, the thing that I look for in every single judge, and especially judicial candidates here in the state of Wisconsin, because we elect them, which I think is not the best way to go about selecting judges, is to see whether or not they have found their way to following the law, even when it might not match with their personal political preferences or the ideologies that they more typically would align with. And when I have reviewed Judge Lazar's record, which I will continue to do, I have yet to find a single decision where you could not have perfectly forecasted what she was going to do as a judge, and certainly as a lawyer within the Wisconsin Department of Justice under Scott Walker. That is not what we need more of. And again, I think the more left-leaning justices on our current Supreme Court need to take a hard look in the mirror and find their way to depoliticize their approach to follow the law. But the last thing we need is yet another hyperpartisan from the far, far right who doesn't understand that in a republic democracy, in a democracy, a republic, a constitutional democracy, that the powers of the executive branch, whether we're talking about a governor's office or the Oval Office, those meet their limit when we reach our individual rights as enumerated in our state and federal constitutions. I think her record as an assistant attorney general in the Department of Justice here in the state of Wisconsin and her record on the bench shows us very plainly that she does not grasp that fundamental tenet of this constitutional democracy that makes me deeply afraid for reproductive freedoms and freedoms writ large in this state. The fundamental idea that the courts should be a check on the tyranny of the majority when that majority seeks to oppress or strip rights from minority groups like, I don't know, women and other folks. Dan, it is always a pleasure. Thanks, as ever, for your insights. We'll continue this discussion. And I think you, me, and Jack Ekblad, we've got another big picture conversation that we've got coming up soon. Thanks so much, Dan. When we come back, we've got Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. We talk about a federal grant that might actually be coming into the state to help us with our railroads. Stay tuned. We talk more on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to my colleague and friend Dan Schaefer, political editor here at Civic Media, and I'm joined now by Jeremy Janine. We're going to continue the locally focused theme. Jeremy Janine, of course, the founder and contributor at Urban Milwaukee, an online newspaper covering all things politics and beyond here in southeastern Wisconsin, an absolute treasure, in my opinion. If you haven't checked it out, do so. Some incredibly important reporting. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy. It's been a hot second since I saw you last. How you been?
Great, minus all the flooding in Milwaukee. I personally was spared, but there's plenty of people going through hardship here.
Oh, yes, we've talked about it extensively on this program. I'm glad that your family escaped unscathed. Let's talk about train speeds in Milwaukee and the intermodal station. Looks like we actually might be getting some federal dollars. That's usually not what I'm reporting in these segments.
This is a strange thing. There's kind of two different types of federal grants. There's formula funds, and that's where the federal government kind of throws a bucket of money over the wall to the states and says, you do what you want with it. And then there's direct grants for specific projects. This comes out of that formula bucket, and it's a program known as CMAQ, Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality. Long-standing federal program, bipartisan support, although sometimes states, depending on who's in charge at the state level where the money actually gets allocated, priorities change there. In this case, the state of Wisconsin is essentially giving the money to itself to help not only its own partnership with Amtrak, with the Amtrak Hiawatha, the Borealis, the Empire Builder, but it'll also help drivers, ironically, by shortening wait times, and it will also help the Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railroad. And what's happening is a series of signal improvements through the Menominee Valley, the Milwaukee Intermodal Station. If you're from out of state, the general area we're talking about is Miller Park, American Family Field, east to the lakefront. Trains there right now slow down to 15 miles per hour, if not slower. This will enable them to get up to 40 miles per hour as they headed towards the train station.
This is one of those things that if you live in and around the Milwaukee area, you have definitely found yourself adjacent to one of those very long, very slow moving trains from time to time. And maybe around about the third ward might have gotten stuck at one of the train crossings for many, 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 many minutes. Is there any pushback here, or is this a fairly uncontroversial, hey, this is a great thing? Just the name of these funds, the CMAQ funds, seems like something Donald Trump would be poo-pooing, but the funds are still moving here.
The funds are already in the state hands. Governor Tony Evers last week announced 22 projects. So Milwaukee County got money to buy buses. The city of Milwaukee also got money to build a protected bike lane on South 16th Street. And there's money that went out across southeastern Wisconsin, because actually the funding is not targeted statewide, but by regions. There's also a northeast region that will be coming up with funding awards soon for the Green Bay area. But there's been no pushback on any of the funding awards I've seen.
So the headline here, Jeremy, is less Donald Trump helps southeastern Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area increase their rail speeds, but more Donald Trump didn't stop Tony Evers from addressing a long-standing rail transport and good transport problem here in southeastern Wisconsin. So we should be really thanking Governor Evers is what I'm hearing.
Yes, as I said, the federal government kind of throws this bucket of money over the wall, and then the state government really gets to decide where it goes. And this project has been on the state's wish list since at least 2015. It's one of 10 projects between Milwaukee and the Chicago area targeted to increase the amount of Hiawatha trains daily from 7 to 10.
Yeah, absolutely critical. I used to take the Hiawatha trains almost weekly to Chicago, and they are an essential, I think, engine and driver for a lot of economic activity here in the Milwaukee, but more broadly, southeastern Wisconsin area. We've talked before, Jeremy, with our brief time left, about the lead abatement program in Milwaukee public schools. With the return to public schools, we know there was a massive push to abate and remediate lead in some 38 schools across the MPS landscape. Where do those efforts stand as kids are returning to school?
Superintendent Brenda Caselius says all the schools that were built before 1950, which is most of them, have been remediated now. That leaves still several schools that could have lead paint built between the 1950 and the 1970s. So there's still more work to be done. But the challenge will be the same way MPS got in this problem in the first place, maintaining that paint, not damaging it, making sure it stays sealed. And that is a thing that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and this is a problem. Again, you need not have a child in the Milwaukee public school system be talking to your school systems across the state. Many of our school buildings are aging and were constructed and or painted, again, before the 1970s and before the 50s. So be aware of where your school district and your kids are going to school and the status of the buildings and paint in your child's school district. Again, just to close out that discussion, activists and advocates in this space have been calling for additional transparency on the remediation. They want the full reports of the remediation to be made public. They also want some additional oversight and transparency as it relates to the subcontractors executing some of that remediation here in the MPS school system. To date, as I understand it, there has only been full clearance reports of those 39 MPS schools for 6 schools and interim reports of 3 schools posted. You can find all of those and additional reports as they become available from MPS by going to MPS's website. Anything else, Jeremy, that comes to mind? You've been following the story incredibly closely for parents to be aware of in this back-to-school season.
I would leave parents with 2 things, regardless of where they are. 1, look for chipping paint. That's always the warning sign. And 2, if you have any concern, it's a simple blood test when your child goes to the pediatrician.
Thanks so much, Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. Always good to see you, my friend. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by State Senator Jody Habesh-Sinkin from Senate District 8. We'll be talking about new legislation to fund the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. Stay with us. It's the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, that is my cue and your cue that this is 4:30 on Wednesdays, and that means it is broad appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show. And by broad appeal, I mean women electeds and other political leaders across our state, because women as electeds make it better always, whether from the left or the right, and they have broad appeal. And I'm really excited to be joined by State Senator Jody Habesh-Sinkin of Senate District 8 for today's installment of Broad Appeal. Welcome to the show, Senator.
Thank you so much, Maggie. I've really been looking forward to it.
I'm so glad that we can have you. A lot to talk about, but let folks get to know you a little bit better. What brought you into electoral politics? Why do you stay, especially in these times where things are so fractured and difficult?
What brought me in, it was as much of a surprise to me, actually, as to many other people. I've been a longtime environmental attorney, policy wonk, academic, and I had been waiting and waiting and waiting for initiatives and policy things that we've been working really hard for to make its way through the legislature, and they were stuck and going nowhere fast. And I thought to myself, if I really want to live to see the change happen, I need to get part of it. So that's really what made me jump in a few years ago.
I think that as we have done this segment over a long time now, what I routinely and consistently hear from women, especially those that have stepped into either be candidates or become elected officials, is that precise moment of clarity that comes whether you see a need within your community that's not being addressed by our elected leaders, or a specific issue where someone has been quite motivated and involved, as you were, State Senator Habesh-Sinkin, and nothing's happening. And folks say, enough is enough. I need to get involved. Let's talk a little bit about some of the environmental legislation that you have been championing. That's a tough one to say. In your time as a state senator, what are some of the pieces of legislation that you think are really critical to the health and well-being of Wisconsin's economy and our families?
Absolutely. Just last week, I introduced the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Reauthorization Bill, which we'd been working on for months before that, building community with stakeholders, with organizations around the state and other legislators across the aisle, because it is a program that is singularly popular in Wisconsin. It has a recent statewide poll has it as over 90% favorable, which in these days and times is, I can't think of anything that's comparable to that level of popularity. And unfortunately, it did not get funded in the budget that passed this early July. So it was something that we really wanted to make sure would move forward. And we introduced a bill because the Republican bill that was introduced, while in good faith, has a particular oversight mechanism which would make the program impractical and not be able to serve its function.
So I want to get to what that element is, but let's level set for all of our listeners, State Senator. What is the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program? When was it created? What is it its purposes, in case some of our folks aren't familiar with it?
Absolutely. I jumped right in there. It is a program that was created by Governor Tommy Thompson. It's over 30 plus years in the making, and it has been widely successful across the aisle. It ensures that there are lands that are being preserved and access to public lands and improvements to our state parks in all 72 of Wisconsin's counties. It is outstanding. In presentations I have given over preceding months, I have been able to identify in every county invaluable land acquisitions and public lands that have been secured for families to enjoy across the state. And that's really what its purpose is to maintain and preserve and acquire lands for our future, which is invaluable to our tourism, recreation, outdoor enjoyment, and just really makes the quality of life in Wisconsin the place that we want to be. It makes Wisconsin really what it is.
That resonates so deeply with me, Senator Hamish Sinkin, because I frequently have talked about on this show, if you ask some Wisconsinites about climate change, you might get one answer. If you ask most Wisconsinites about outdoor recreation, do you spend time with your family and friends enjoying our bountiful natural resources here in the state of Wisconsin, you get a very, very different response, because almost universally, all of us, as you were citing some of those statistics regarding polling about this project, Wisconsinites love our outdoors. We want them protected. We understand that natural resources and recreation is an essential part of Wisconsin's economy, too. It's good for business. It's good for our tax bases. And in order to continue to have that legacy of great natural resources and outdoor recreation, we have to protect and expand our public lands. So with that all as the baseline, we all recreate outside is an essential piece of, I think, our shared Wisconsin identity and values. What's this obstacle that you spoke of earlier, this oversight mechanism that you believe makes the Republican funding bill of the Knowles Nelson program untenable?
Yeah, thank you. It's really the most important question, and I appreciate you allowing me to explain it. Essentially, the Republican bill that was introduced, again, with good intention, because remember, not one single Republican voted to reauthorize the program during the budget process. So these two Republicans, Representative Kurtz and Senator Teston, introduced a bill to try to also save the program. But what it includes is an oversight mechanism, just a fancy word for how land acquisitions will be reviewed, that would be fundamentally impractical or not workable. It would require certain land acquisitions to go through the entirety of the legislative process, through the Assembly, through the Senate, all its committees and working groups, and ultimately the governor. Sometimes that could take up to a year and a half, 2 years, or get tied up and never happen.
Indefinitely.
And that oversight mechanism is what we have worked on in our bill to replace with something that is transparent and accountable. It would be with a Knowles Nelson stewardship board that would include representatives from both parties, from both the Senate, the Assembly, the DNR, the Natural Resources Conservation Organization, the tribes, just a wonderful mix of citizens. That is really what this type of oversight should be all about anyways, something that's open, transparent, that the public can watch carefully.
And Senator, I'm going to attribute these next comments to me and me exclusively. I want to be quite careful here. I've worked in government for a very long time. One of the things that I advised elected officials frequently about is that oftentimes, while their initial instinct may be that they want every contract or every land deal to come before them for review, that can open up an elected official to all sorts of lobbying and special interests and big money. And that in many instances, that is at a level of oversight detail that is best left to bipartisan committees that also have citizen and interest group representation. In other words, to avoid those untoward pressures from big money, since we still have so much money in politics, it is precisely the type of oversight board that you're describing here, Senator, that actually helps to insulate legislators from the possibility of that outside big money influence trying to push them to not do what's best for Wisconsinites, but what is best for the deep-pocketed lobbying groups, which I am certain would be opposed in many ways, shapes, and forms to the very preservation that the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is designed to ensure for the benefit of all Wisconsinites, including water access rights. We could talk about what's going on under the hood about that for a long time, but I just wanted people to understand it might sound like you want a legislature in the details of these things, but my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, is that's actually a really bad idea when it comes to conservation of our natural resources and public lands because of the fact that we have so much money in politics. I'll let you respond or gloss in whatever way that you would like, Senator. And again, I wanted to take great care that those are my comments and not attribute them to you, Senator.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That has been my understanding as a person prior to this Senate role. And I can see how that would be a challenge with going through an entire legislative process. I also want to talk about something else, which is just real life timing. Try to think of any real estate transaction we've ever had, maybe with buying a house or property, anything that could wait a year and a half or more to be able to proceed. So these opportunities for these fabulous once-in-a-lifetime land acquisitions, like the one that just became available adjoining Devil's Lake, they come up like this, and guess what? If there isn't an opportunity to move quickly and have approval and funding, it goes away. You can't say, I have a contingency on an inspection and financing, and also, by the way, a legislative process through both houses and the governor. So that's just another aspect to it. What we have set up is something that is negotiable. We included as many groups and nonpartisan entities as possible. But again, our bill is very much intended to be a starting point for conversations with the Republicans who crafted their bill so that we can work out a program that can proceed in a bipartisan way. So our committee, this Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Oversight Committee, is modeled after other workable ones, like the one already for forestry and for tourism, as you referred to earlier. This is modeled. We can work with it. We can work with the funding. We can work for the over what period of time. We have presented this with thought and good intention to have it be a starting point for discussions, because we know that Wisconsinites want to save this program. So that is really our compass point.
Yeah, so much in your comments, Senator. The first thing I want to point out is, again, this is my characterization. What the state senator just explained is that her bill is a starting point. She has opened the door to legislative Republicans to meet her and negotiate on these various elements of the bill. But what is a non-starter is subjecting this essential program to bogged down, time-consuming, and again, susceptible to lobbying influence legislative processes. The legislatures haven't been moving super fast, whether we're looking at Congress or the state legislature here in Wisconsin. Sometimes that's a good thing. It's a deliberative process. But when it comes to these kinds of opportunities, it could cost Wisconsinites dearly. We're going to take care of a little business on our end. We're going to come back with State Senator Jody Habish-Sinkin, and we're going to talk a little bit about her background, who she is, and maybe some fun stuff. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll continue this discussion about how we all enjoy our Wisconsin resources on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media, Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is this week's installment of Broad Appeal. Before I bring back my next guest, I wanted to share some breaking news with you. A federal judge has issued an injunction blocking the Trump administration from freezing Harvard's funding, calling the anti-Semitism, quote, excuse, a smokescreen for a targeted, ideologically motivated assault on this country's premier universities, end quote. I should say, I didn't know what my afternoon's reading was going to be, but I think that decision from the federal court judge hearing that case is going to be first on my afternoon reading list. That should make for some interesting note-taking, apparently some absolutely scathing language from the judge in that case. I have got a Harvard Law School graduate with me this afternoon. It is attorney, but more importantly for these purposes, State Senator Jody Habish-Zinkin. She's joining me today. We've been talking about her passion for natural resources and preservation here in the state of Wisconsin and her sponsorship of a bill to fund, again, the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, a program that's been in place since 1989, excuse me. And if you remember Wisconsin political history, and you remember back, that was under Republican and much revered Governor Tommy Thompson. And yet somehow we can't figure out how to fund it today. Welcome back, and thanks for sticking around, Senator Habish-Zinkin. During the break, you were telling me that funding stalled in the Joint Finance Committee during this last biennial budget deliberation and then ended up dying due to an anonymous objection at the JFC, which I thought was very interesting. Why we even allow such things in a legislative proceeding is beyond me. But tell us a little bit about what happened in this last cycle.
Well, actually, what happened during this budget was that not one single Republican voted in favor of it. The Democrats really had fought to have Knowles Nelson included in this year's budget, and Senate Democrats introduced an amendment, but not one single Republican voted in its favor. What I was mentioning with regard to the anonymous objection had to do with what the Supreme Court recently ruled as unconstitutional,
yes.
Which was these anonymous objections for these land acquisitions. It came up actually in my own election against my opponent at that point, which was in the Cedar Gorge Clay Bluffs. There came in late an anonymous objection to this far, much loved project, and no one knew who it was coming from, but it was special interest with a winery and McMansions, and people were not at all happy with that process. The process that we are proposing with this bipartisan, multi-group individual with the oversight and transparency is yes. An absolute answer and an antidote to that prior system, which has been rendered and ruled unconstitutional.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. I had misunderstood your comments during our break. And that state Supreme Court decision was quite critical of what I'm calling these legislative hijinks, kind of these little logistical rules that permitted legislators, without publicly opposing things, to kill projects like the funding of this particular program through legislative backdoor maneuvering. It's the absolute opposite of accountability and transparency in government. The other element that I wanted to touch upon before we turn to some of the fun stuff, if you will, was the simple idea of land transactions, not just is it timely, and not just if you have to submit it to the entire legislature, will it not be timely, and it opens up the possibility for billionaire overlords and lobbyists to insert themselves into this process, but the very logistics of getting a land transaction through a legislature. I can just say, as the former chief legal officer for Milwaukee County, it would be insane. You cannot have legislators redlining and amending agreements as if they're A, lawyers, or B, the correct subject matter expert, or C, in the right position to negotiate these kinds of land transactions. Am I overstating that? But it just seems completely like such nonsense to me that that would even be considered an appropriate process.
I 100% agree. And that is literally why, when we're coming forward with this thoughtful proposal as a starting point for negotiations, that we are coming right out and being open that the money, the funding for the program, is less important to us than the integrity of the program, maintaining the ability of the program to maintain the properties that we as taxpayers have already invested in over all these decades, as well as have that ability when one of those key land acquisitions becomes possible, that we can act in a way with proper oversight that doesn't end in partisan gridlock, which would be inevitable through the legislative process, and also just be entirely opaque.
Yeah.
And apart from what the public could understand, it would just get lost in all the committees and the process. So that's really where we're starting. And I have to say, I am hopeful.
Yes.
That we have support on both sides of the aisle on this. We have Wisconsinites from every part of the state, every county is supporting this. My own office, Senate District 8, we've gotten more letters and more calls on this program reauthorizing it than any other matter. And that's saying a lot. So I just am really feeling optimistic and hopeful that we will be able to work productively with Republicans and get this beloved program across the finish line.
Folks, pick up the phone, get your emails out, call your state senators and state representatives and tell them to back State Senator Jody Habish-Sinkin's proposal to reinvigorate, refund, and put it proper oversight in for the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. We're going to have to leave it there. Next time we come back, we're doing just fun stuff. Okay, not just fun stuff. We'll do politics, but then some more fun stuff. Thank you so much, State Senator Jody Habish-Sinkin. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. I'm going to be joined by Lieutenant Diane Goldstein, Executive Director of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.